in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and online at kfai.org. And so are you.
You are listening to North Star Stories, Voices from Where We Live, a daily newscast about what it means to live in Minnesota.
Today, Minnesota's Secretary of State fires back at Washington about what he says are false election claims. Then, an iconic concert comes to the North Star State for the first time in 40 years. And a fashion designer from Duluth is heading to the nation's biggest stage. I'm Gracie J. Minnesota Secretary of State Steve Simon pushed back on President Trump's claims about elections. Simon called the president's social media post from earlier this month, quote, alarming, and warned that it spreads conspiracy theories. He said the Constitution gives states, not the president, full control of elections. Simon says Minnesota ballots are always cast on paper, counted with certified tabulators, and verified for accuracy. He also defended voting by mail as a secure bipartisan option used by more than 1.2 million Minnesotans last year. Simon promised to fight in court if Trump tries to seize state election authority. In today's main story, for the first time in its 40-year history, Farm Aid is bringing its music festival to Minnesota. McFinnigan talks to the organization behind the iconic concert about why they chose our state.
Live for Farm Aid at a concert for America. Here's Willie Nelson!
That was September of 1985 for Farm Aid's first music festival to support family farmers. Now, 40 years later, for the first time ever, Farm Aid is coming to Minnesota. Co-executive director Jennifer Fahey says it's been a goal of theirs to bring the music festival here.
Because of the rich history here in the farm movement, agriculture in general, many of our partner groups are here who have been our partners since 1985.
One of those longtime partners is IATP, the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy. Ben Lillison, Director of Rural Strategies and Climate Change, has attended a handful of Farm Aid festivals over the years.
IATP was formed a little bit after Farm Aid actually started, but we've always been partners. And what Farm Aid does is put a spotlight on the situation for farmers at any particular time.
Ben reflected on the special performances he's seen, but emphasized that Farm Aid puts an incredible amount of effort to keep farm families on the land.
One of the things it does is shine a light on wherever the location is, what that food and farming system is like. And so it's really cool to be able to shine a light on what Minnesota is doing.
At the festival, they highlight local farming in the area called the Homegrown Village. Attendees can expect to learn about the state's diverse and resilient agriculture economy that makes Minnesota unique.
You have your corn and your soy and your hog producers and so forth. But we also have a lot of organic production, CSA production, people selling into local markets, to schools. We have our whole food co-op system, which is very unique.
Minnesota has long embraced the changing farm economy. Todd Western IV is an urban farmer in North Minneapolis. He has found success selling at farmers markets like the one in Richfield, where they can support food pantries like Veep, the Twin Cities' largest food shelf.
They're allowed to purchase the leftover produce, and they bring it to the local food shelf.
The senior and farmers market nutrition programs that allow markets to buy excess produce is on hold for the time being.
Yeah, I'd say right now it's just a lot of uncertainty on a number of fronts.
Jennifer from Farm Aid says uncertainty is hard for farmers, as farming is inherently uncertain and risky.
So we pay attention to those issues and see what can we lift up? What do eaters need to know that could help them support farmers?
Educating eaters or consumers is a big part of the festival's mission. Outside of the festival, Farm Aid works year-round to support family farmers through their Farmer Resource Hotline, breaking down farming news, and platforming the stories and struggles of farmers.
You know, we exist to support farmers when they need us, but also to just appreciate farmers and to bring people in to do that too, so we can support them every day and make them stronger.
The festival will take place at Huntington Bank Stadium on the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus on September 20th. There will be performances by the founders Willie Nelson, Neil Young, and John Mellencamp, along with a stellar lineup of other musician activists. More information on the festival at farmaid.org. This is Mick Finnegan with North Star Stories.
You are listening to North Star Stories. A Duluth designer is bringing Minnesota style to New York Fashion Week. Leo Spry, who grew up in Bemidji, will debut his brand on the nation's biggest fashion stage with pieces like loon camouflage pants inspired by his roots. Northern News Now TV in Duluth reports that Spry began designing during the pandemic after receiving a sewing machine in college and has since built his label, 037, selling online and collaborating with artists. He'll host a show in Minneapolis before heading to the Big Apple for Fashion Week.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Businesses brace for an increase in the state's minimum wage. Then, WTIP reports on a new population living in Northeast Minnesota. And a Twin Cities high school student gets national recognition. I'm Chantel Sings. Some Minnesota businesses are preparing for an increase in the minimum wage. The increase goes into effect on January 1st, bringing the new rate to $11.41 an hour. That's an increase of 28 cents an hour, or about 2.5%. Team workers in their 90-day training period will see their minimum wage go up to $9.31 an hour. The change does not affect local ordinances that require a higher rate. Minneapolis requires a minimum of $15.97 an hour, while in St. Paul, the rate is $15 for small businesses and $15.97 for larger ones. The federal minimum wage remains unchanged at $7.25. Next, WTIP News Director Callie Hawkins talks about the community's efforts to preserve the landscape and a new population of turtles found living in Lake County. Here's North Star Stories Director of News, Victor Palomino.
The northeast corner of Minnesota is recognized statewide for its natural beauty, fauna, and flora. Recently, WTIP Director Callie Hawkins reported on a new population discovery in the area.
So this is a research project that I've been tracking for about 3 years, and I spoke to some of the researchers 2 years ago as they were undergoing this wood turtle research project in Lake and St. Louis counties.
The researchers were looking for reasons why turtles are being killed along roads and also for nest success.
And a part of that discovery, they were able to find a new population of wood turtles in Lake County.
And now they are looking to see if the species can be found in other places.
The researchers, Gia Crozier, that I spoke with, she's the non-game wildlife specialist with the Minnesota DNR. She said that there are not at this time any documented wood turtles in Cook County, but they're always accepting pictures of random unique turtles from individuals. And so there could be a population in Cook County, but more research needs to be done.
In other news from the Northeast, I asked Callie about what is happening with the Grand Marais hillside.
So this topic has been one of discussion for many, many decades among our community. The question being whether to develop the hillside, which overlooks Grand Marais. But now this new focus and new property is the John Sheaf property, which is about 80 acres. And it would, in essence, based off of what a Cook County judge has recently approved, that he's able to gain access to his landlocked piece of property that he bought back in 2005.
The ruling will allow for road construction through the Bedrock area.
It would be very difficult, require about a mile of a road to be built through, and something that would potentially, depending upon the path of that road, be very visible.
A community group is invested in keeping the views as they are.
About 15 Cook County residents, some local officials involved in there just in a volunteer manner, have organized and mobilized to try to purchase that 80 acres from John Sheaf.
Recently, the Cook County Board of Commissioners expressed an intent to buy the land with the provision that taxpayers' money won't be used and the county is not allowed to fundraise to buy the property.
There's people that share both perspectives of, we have minimal private land in Cook County to develop. It would improve our local tax base if this property was sold to developers or private individuals. So there's pros and cons to this and something that our community and some of our residents are weighing right now.
To hear the full stories and all the news from the Northeast, visit WTIP.org. For North Star Stories, I'm Victor Palomino.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Minneapolis teen Huxley Westermeyer has won a $25,000 Davidson Fellow Scholarship for his technology project detecting artificial images on the web. The award is one of the nation's most prestigious honors for students 18 and younger. Huxley created a tool that detects whether an image is real or generated by artificial intelligence by analyzing the unique fingerprint of authentic photos. The software runs on almost any device without internet and accurately identifies manipulated sections of images. Huxley is a senior at St. Paul Academy in Summit School and will represent the U.S. at the 2026 Taiwan International Science Fair.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
The state secures federal funding for education. Then, what is in our food? Why lawmakers are banning some popular food dyes? And a new renewable energy project gets the green light. I'm Gracie J. Minnesota Attorney General says his office has secured an agreement requiring the federal government to release the full balance of education funds that had been frozen. The Trump administration withheld $74 million from Minnesota and hundreds of millions nationwide, affecting after-school programs, teacher preparation, and support for English learners. The state attorney general and a coalition of states sued, calling the freeze unlawful. Under the agreement, the administration will release the remaining money by early October, and both sides have move to dismiss the lawsuit. The Attorney General's office says it will keep fighting if the feds try and withhold funds again in the future. Next, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and some Minnesota lawmakers want to ban a popular food additive. Producer Britt Ahmet tells us why.
Mary Beth Gilsdorf kept waiting for her daughter to age out of her tantrums.
We went through the terrible twos and then what I consider the worst threes. But then we got to four, and it was like, wow, this is really still not getting better. And then we got to school.
Like many parents, this mom from Northwest Minnesota hit the internet trying to figure out what was going on.
A lot of the symptoms I was Googling, it kept coming up with, oh, ADHD. I know that's not my daughter.
Then around 2003, when her daughter was six, she heard about a connection between artificial dyes used in foods and behavioral issues with kids. She decided to weed them out of their diet. It couldn't hurt.
For a week, it didn't take very long, but the difference was overwhelming. My example was we had dinner one night and she spilled milk. My husband and I, and even our younger daughter, the whole table just held our breath because that was the kind of thing that would set off a night of tantrums and tears. And instead, my daughter paused and said, I'll go get a rag and I'll clean that up.
The idea that artificial food dyes could impact health was a movement slowly gaining exposure until April 2025, when the U.S. Food and Drug Administration declared an intention to phase out six synthetic dyes by the end of next year. Minnesota-based General Mills promised to remove the dyes from its U.S. cereals and K-12 foods by next summer. Europe and California have already banned the dyes, and some Minnesota lawmakers have proposed a bill that would do the same.
We're all on board for that.
Dr. Joanne Slavin is a professor in the University of Minnesota's Department of Food Science and Nutrition. She says there's no reason artificial food dyes, which are petroleum-derived chemicals, need to be in our food supply when natural alternatives are available. But she worries about fast-tracking their removal.
We go in and make these policies that aren't practical for the people that have to feed the world. You know, whether you're at school lunch or a hospital or your family.
To her, food security is the more pressing issue. A hasty ban could impact food availability to schools, food shelves, shelters, and the SNAP food assistance program. She also adds that the ban isn't a magic bullet. Artificial colors tend to be found in
what we could call junk foods in the past or ultra-processed foods.
Those prepackaged shelf-stable goodies that can contain loads of sodium, sugar, saturated fats, and preservatives. Still, removing the artificial colors is a good step forward for Mary Beth Gilsdorf, who, over 10 years ago, created the Facebook group Dye-Free Kids to give another space for families who wanted to ask questions and share knowledge.
It's overdue. It adds nothing nutritionally or health-wise, and not all kids are affected by it, but the ones that are, it's very impactful.
This is Britt Ahmet for North Star Stories.
You are listening to North Star Stories. The Minnesota Public Utilities Commission has approved a site permit for the Snowshoe Energy Storage Project, the state's first standalone battery storage facility. Located in Olmsted County between Byron and Rochester, the 150-megawatt project will store excess electricity for up to 4 hours and release it during high-demand periods. Officials say it will help smooth energy fluctuations and support more renewable power on the grid. The battery energy storage systems must coordinate with local governments and emergency responders on water water main plans, emergency equipment, and training, all at the company's expense. The facility is expected to be online by late 2027.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
The case against a Wisconsin judge accused of helping an immigrant avoid arrest is moving forward. Then, why some communities are still using the old state flag, and how the state became the home to one of the oldest LGBTQ2S+ libraries. I'm Chantel Sings. A federal judge has ruled that the case against a Wisconsin circuit judge accused of helping a man evade immigration arrest can move forward. Northern News Now TV in Duluth reports that Judge Hannah Dugan faces misdemeanor and felony charges after prosecutors said she escorted a man and his lawyer out of her courtroom through a back door while immigration agents waited outside. Her attorneys argued she was immune because she acted in her official role, but the court rejected that claim. The ruling clears the way for the Trump administration's prosecution, part of its broader crackdown on local authorities who resist federal immigration enforcement. In today's main story, Minnesota released a new state flag more than a year ago, creating a fair amount of controversy. Today, some cities and counties around the state are still flying the old flag. Lydia Moran has more on the story.
The old flag was very pertinent to Minnesota, portrayed our history and so on, and this new flag portrays nothing.
Jim Lassie sits on the city council in Babbitt, Minnesota. In February, the council voted against flying the new Minnesota state flag, which became official more than a year ago. Babbitt is a town of about 1,300, nestled on the Mesabi Iron Range in northern Minnesota. It joined a handful of communities around the state that have passed resolutions against flying the new state flag at government-owned buildings. These include cities such as Detroit Lakes and Cross Lake, and counties including Nobles, Mower, Crow Wing, and Becker. The reasons behind their decisions vary. Some say they didn't feel represented during the flag redesign process.
This is the result of a decades-long fight and movement to change these emblems because they were so divisive, because they were offensive to a portion of Minnesotans.
Dr. Anita Tulls-McGall was vice chair of the State Emblems Redesign Commission. She was one of three members from Greater Minnesota.
For me as a historian, I wanted to make sure that this is a flag that unified Minnesotans, didn't divide us, and better reflected who we are and our aspirations.
For many Native communities across Minnesota, the previous flag was a harmful relic of colonial violence. It shows a white farmer tilling the land as a Native man rides off into the sunset.
We knew we wanted a lot of public input. This is not the product of 17 commission members. We wanted all of Minnesota to be part of this process.
The commission sifted through nearly 2,600 public submissions for the new seal and flag design. Three rounds of public comment followed. Lassie says it wasn't enough.
And I thought, why comment? They're going to do whatever they want to do anyhow.
He wishes the redesign was put up for a statewide vote. But Minnesota does not have a process for statewide referendums on policy decisions. To be clear, there are no legal repercussions for flying the old state flag at county or city-owned buildings. Courthouses are the only locations where up-to-date state flags must be displayed. At the state fair this year, the GOP made it clear that they see the flag redesign as a partisan issue. The Republican Party of Minnesota booth passed out copies of the old flag to passersby.
I myself am Native American. I love seeing myself on that flag. I have just seen across the nation over and over, Natives are just getting erased right, left, and center.
That's Republican Party of Minnesota Deputy Chair Donna Bergstrom. But Anita Tulls-McGall with the Redesign Commission says change does not equal erasure.
Our old flag is not erased. It is simply our previous flag.
For North Star Stories, I'm Lydia Moran.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Minneapolis is home to one of the oldest LGBTQ2S+ lending libraries in the country. The Quatrefoil Library, founded in 1986, began with a private collection of gay and lesbian fiction shared among friends. Today, it offers thousands of circulating books, DVDs, and CDs, as well as archives, comics, and periodicals available on site at its East Lake Street location.
Quatrefoil is the third oldest library of its kind in the U.S., continuing its mission as both a lending library and a community center dedicated to preserving and sharing queer history and culture.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
The viral video of a woman making racial slurs has resulted in even more criminal charges. Then, state leaders face questions after the latest mass shooting. And Minnesota blood banks need your donations. I'm Gracie J. Well, a brother and sister in Rochester now face criminal charges accused of fraudulently claiming money intended for the family impacted by a racist incident earlier this year. In May, a video of a woman yelling racial slurs at a young child at a Rochester park went viral. The NAACP raised more than $300,000 for the victim. A brother and sister falsely claim to be the impacted family. The NAACP confirms no funds were distributed to the siblings now accused of fraud. Meanwhile, the woman accused of making the racist slurs now faces charges of disorderly conduct. Next, after the shooting at Annunciation Catholic School in Minneapolis, state leaders are facing new pressure to act on gun violence. But the path forward is far from clear. Zan Holston has more.
Two children dead, 18 injured, in a community reeling from a shooting on the first day of school. But while people try to make sense of what happened, Minnesota's gun control debate has been reignited.
We need a statewide and a federal ban on assault weapons.
Flanked by members of Moms Demand Action, Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey called for major changes to state and federal gun laws. He also pressed for a ban on high-capacity magazines.
There is no reason that someone should be able to reel off 30 shots before they even have to reload.
According to Every Town for Gun Safety, a national group that tracks gun laws and advocates for restrictions, 10 other states have already banned both assault rifles and high-capacity magazines. With the renewed pressure for action, Governor Tim Walz is planning a special legislative session to discuss a gun control package he said won't infringe on Second Amendment rights. But any new gun legislation faces hurdles. Democrats have a one-seat majority in the Senate, while Republicans hold an extra seat in the House.
We don't see any progress on gun violence prevention when there is anything other than a Democratic majority in the state.
Maggie Emery is executive director of Protect Minnesota, a coalition working to prevent gun violence. She says the problem is one of political will.
Not because gun violence is or should be a partisan issue, but because our parties truly cannot work together to get this done.
Emery says gridlock can't be an excuse any longer and argues lawmakers need to act before another community is forced to confront the same kind of tragedy.
It's Minnesota's turn today, but it will be somewhere else's turn tomorrow. This will keep happening until our legislators have the political courage to stand up to the gun lobby and to do what's right to protect children and our communities.
For David Zimmer, the debate is too narrow, and that creates the partisan divide that keeps Democrats and Republicans from finding common ground.
One way to ensure everybody is at the table is to make sure you expand the discussion beyond just restricting firearms.
Zimmer is a policy fellow at conservative think tank Center for the American Experiment. He says a special session and calls to ban firearms in the wake of tragedies don't get at the deeper societal problems that lead to mass shootings. While he disagrees with calls for this kind of gun legislation, Zimmer says he understands the rationale behind them. But he can't support new laws that don't also get into issues of mental health.
We have to get into some really meaty subjects, like what is broken in our society.
Ultimately, Zimmer said finding solutions that go beyond policy changes to a wider cultural shift is going to take time.
We didn't get into this problem in a couple of months, and we're not going to get out of it in a couple of months with a special session and passing a couple of new laws.
For North Star Stories, I'm Zan Holston.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Minnesota is facing a blood supply shortage. The amount on hand has dropped below a two-day inventory, according to Memorial Blood Centers. Hospitals normally need at least 7 days' worth to meet patient demand. All blood types are urgently needed, especially O negative and O positive, which are critical in emergencies. The shortage worsened this summer as donations fell during school breaks, vacations, and heat waves, while trauma cases increased. Health officials are urging the public to donate now. Donors can give blood every 56 days or platelets twice a month. Appointments are available online at mbc.org.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota. Online at ambers.org.
I'm Murray Rock, and this is Minnesota Native News. This week, a look at a story behind Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe citizen Anita Lovelace's dress that recently won the 2025 People's Choice Award at the Minnesota State Fair's Fine Arts Competition. Plus, how Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College celebrates the harvest with an annual Indigenous Foods Gathering. First, let's hear from Deanna Standing Cloud.
The first shingle dress is said to come from right here in Minnesota. A dream of this dress came to a father of a girl who was sick during the flu epidemic in the 1920s. It's told to be the turning point toward the girl's recovery back to health. Over 100 years later, the jingle dress movement has evolved and is bringing healing for another epidemic, missing and murdered Indigenous relatives, also known as MMIR.
You have to do this with a place of love in your heart. Learn about the history of what has been done to Indigenous people here on Turtle Island in the United States.
Guadalupe Lopez is a citizen of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe and recently accepted the role as director of the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives Office, established in 2021.
I am very proud of Minnesota for having two offices for the epidemic of missing and murdered for our Indigenous relatives and our Black women and girls.
In 2024, there were 716 reported missing Indigenous people in Minnesota. Many people across the state are personally affected. One of those is community teacher, crafter, and Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe citizen, Anita Lovelace.
One evening I was sitting here at the sewing machine. Something just told me to go cut that dress out.
The vision to make a dress honoring missing and murdered Indigenous relatives emerged from both Anita and her daughter, Alita.
I felt it so strongly, and so did she. And she says, and it's got to have red handprints on it. We ourselves have family members on this jingle dress. I have three family members on the one sleeve, and she also has a grandmother on it.
Anita entered her MMIR jingle dress into the 2025 Minnesota State Fair Fine Arts Competition.
The fine arts to me was always kind of intimidating because I heard the odds of getting in there are like really slim. I'm like, I'll never get in. My first try and I got in with this dress.
The jingle dress is black fabric lined with silver cones that clash against one another to create a distinct sound during the iconic jingle dress dance. There are bright red handprints behind the names of Indigenous people who were murdered or are still missing.
Two of the people on that dress are Leech Lakers, as I am. Meeting with these people was really emotional.
For her, the jingle dress itself belonged to the community. The MMIR jingle dress won the 2025 People's Choice Award at the Fine Arts Competition at the Minnesota State Fair. For Minnesota Native News, I'm Deanna Standing Cloud.
Next, how Fond du Lac students and community members honor Indigenous agriculture and food sovereignty. Chaz Wagner has the story.
A two-day Indigenous Foods Gathering event took place on the Fond du Lac Reservation in the first weekend of September. The first event was held at the tribe's Gitigaaning Community Farm near Big Lake.
You got me started on it, and since then I've been just doing it myself every year, really.
The gathering was hosted by the Fond du Lac Tribal Community College's 13 Moons and Bemadji Itty Win programs. One of the organizers, Phil Savage, explains that it's an event that celebrates community.
We focus on season-specific cultural activities and traditions of the Anishinaabe people. This summer, we've done a lot of agriculture work, and to celebrate that, we're having a garden celebration.
The second day held a much larger gathering at the Fond du Lac Ojibwe School and featured various demonstrations such as wild rice push-pole making, lacrosse, a farmer's market, and a feast with fresh berries, vegetables, and squash harvested from the nearby garden, Bemadji Itty Win.
This will be my fourth time attending, but I like them. I like when they have food summits. The dinner was amazing. We had Brussels sprouts, collard carrots, some squash, bison, and then we had a cake with a berry compote. But the food was amazing. It was delicious.
This year was Fond du Lac Tribal Community College's 5th annual Garden Feast. For more information on future gatherings, follow the 13 Moons Facebook page. For Minnesota Native News, I'm Chaz Wagner.
Minnesota Native News is produced by Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting Run Westy Run at the Turf Club, Friday, September 26th.